Okay, so today we're starting from Kesayin Amud Aleph, near the top, second line, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So far we've been discussing it in David HaMelech's wives and children. Specifically, we discussed where we know the rules of 18 wives. So, we mentioned the first six children that he had to the first six wives that he had. So now we're going to go into a side discussion that will lead into one of those sons. The son being Amnon, in the oldest. So David had 400 children. David had 400 young men. It doesn't literally mean that he had 400 children. It means that he had 400 young men in his army. Kulam b'nei yifas tayar hayu. All of them were children of Eishes Fas Tayar. Pasuk in Parshas Ki Tzetzeh, and talk about it when Jews are at war. Parshas explained that back that. Sifri explains that back then, soldiers, the enemies would often and bring their women in to the battle to show them off, to try to get the men distracted, to try to get them to slip up, and the women would be dressed very nicely and fancily. They're basically the original cheerleaders. Soldiers, when they see these women, are gonna be overcome by Yitzhar sometimes. They're called Yeladim because they were young lads. They weren't, and particularly old, they were younger people. Because they weren't soldiers. They were not soldiers. They were in David's army. But they were not soldiers. They served a different purpose, which we're going to see in a moment. Because of this Yitzhara, Hashem made it that a Yid is allowed to marry them. There's different opinions in the how exactly it works. According to the Minchas Chinuch explanation of Rashi, what the man does is he can have relations with her immediately, and then he can take her into his house and choose is whether to follow the instructions of the psukim, and after that he can and choose to keep her, even as a non-Jew, but still as a woman that he's allowed to have relations with. A unusual case where one's allowed to have relations with non-Jew. According to Tosfos, a man cannot have relations with her immediately. It's another way around. That's according to Rashi, you cannot have relations immediately, but you can bring her into the house and follow all the rules, and then afterwards, you can have relations with her even as a non-Jew. And their children would be non-Jews. According to Tosfos, you can bring them into the house and have relations immediately. Well, first, you can have relations immediately in battle, because the Yitzhar is in battle, so it wouldn't help. Tetzis argue that it wouldn't help to wait. So, relations immediately. And then any children born from that are have the status of a Gyarim, of a, yeah. And then after that, she does all the stuff in the Pesukim, and he's a full Yid, and he can marry her and everything. So whether according to Rashi or according to Tesis, Tesis points out that this is actually originally Machlekes Rashi Tesis, actually originates from Machlekes in the Yerushalmi between Rav and Shmuel. Regardless, whatever opinion you have, there was 400 of these is a Bnei Eshes Fas Tayar. And the godly players are you. They would grow their hair long in the manner of that goyim grew their hair. V'chol an yeshim v'chrenes shal zahav. They would sit in golden chariots. Mahal chibreshik yosis is how you. And they would go at the front of the front lines of battle. Min balei grefin shal beisavin. And these were the biggest weapon that David's house had. What's the weapon? How are these? Is people? First off, there's different questions. One, what's so special about these people? That's their Bnei Eshes Fas Tayar, which we know that the next Pesukim after Eshes Fas Tayar is Minsara Meira. How could the Bnei Eshes Fas Tayar being said that they're a good thing, that they were the strongest? And also, how could they have been growing their hair long when on B'darach HaGoyim, Loisei Chol B'chukas HaGoyim? So, the answer to both of these is, they wouldn't actually serve in battle. What they do, they sit in these chariots as a sign, as a symbol of power. David won many wars early in his reign. So now later in his reign, when these lads are now old enough to come and sit in the front lines. They're coming, doing that. And the enemy sees these young men and knows what's going on here. The fact that they're wearing their hair long is because they're showing off their heritage. That they were born from non-Jewish mothers. Well, from mothers who were previously non-Jewish. How did these non-Jewish mothers come? Because David had utterly destroyed them. Utterly destroyed them in a war. He's showing off his might. He's showing off how he wins battles and takes their women and so now in these later battles he has his children that are living proof that David HaMelech is a powerful king. Who won a great many wars, and that would strike fear into the enemy's hearts, and cause them to flee, and cause them to be afraid, and cause them to not fight as well as they could otherwise. So that was David HaMelech's secret weapon. As for the fact that they grew their hair long, it doesn't specify which stuff. That's up to Racham to decide. So Racham decided that for this special weapon, they'd be allowed to do this kind of braiding the hair, because in a sense this is only a derabanan, the specific form of chukasagayim. Therefore, they're able to override it to help the Jews. Have victory. So now in that connection, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Tamar Bas Yefas Tayar Haisa. Tamar was the daughter of a Yefas Tayar, of an Yefas Fas Tayar. It's Achanayim Israelis. She's called Achanayim of Yisrael. Yisrael was a foreign nation that David Melech conquered early in his reign. Even in while being Saul General, he took this woman and had a tumor with her. Sorry, Itamar wasn't in from a Summer was from a different woman. An unspecified woman. She was a daughter of an Aesis Vasayer. Shnemar, what's the proof? The Pasuk says, Dabanal Melech, Kileim Neini, Mimeka. Mimeka. The whole story, Amnon loved how Tamar looked, had lusted for her, and won her. So finally, he had a scheme, faked illness, got Tamar Eris secluded with him, and raped her. He then hated her and sent her out, refused to marry her, and. So, before he argues, don't do this, speak to our father, speak to David HaMelech, and he'll allow us to marry. So now, how would he have been allowed to marry his sister? If they're both children of David, then they wouldn't have been able to be married. So, the explanation is that a child of Yifas Tayar, who, according to Tosfos, was conceived while she's still a goyta, and therefore isn't considered David's child la halacha. So midaraisa, he'd be allowed to marry her, and apparently there hadn't yet been a midrabbanan to forbid that. And according to Rashi. Whether according to Menachem's explanation that the Aesis Vasayer is allowed to live as a non-Jew, and then children would be non-Jewish, and then Tamar would have converted, so there again would have been allowed to. Or according to other Mefarshim, they explain that Tamar wasn't actually a David's son at all, David's daughter at all. That this Aesis Vasayer, this David, it took. Was pregnant before, and then David took her, and when Tamar was born, David had raised her, and as we learned previously, Kol Megadol Yatim Sech Beis, anyone who raises an orphan in his house, Tara considers it as if that orphan is his child. So, they consider that if Tamar was a child. However, because halachically, because factually Tamar wasn't a child, and would have been able to marry her. So regardless, it's proof that it wasn't a regular child of David's, which would have been an usher to Amnon, but that she was a daughter of Yifas Tayar. I got it wrong. Achnaim Ezeilis, we know, was a born Jew. Particularly, Yisrael, I'm remembering now, is a city that shows up a few times throughout the Tanakh as a Jewish city. So, clearly, she couldn't be a non-on, she clearly couldn't be Amnon. Also, Tamar is the one whose mother isn't mentioned, so it makes sense that she's the one who's a Abasa Yifas Tayar. So now Gemara goes into discussion about the story of Amnon and Tamar. L'Amnon Reya Ushma Yenadav Ben Shema Achi David. Yenadav Yishchachem, the Gemara. Amnon had a friend whose name is Yenadav, son of Shema, Shema being brother of David. And Yonadav was a wise man. And normally, when we say Chacham, we're talking about Chacham in a good way. However, over here, Yonadav, the only Chacham that we see of him is that he advises Amnon how to get to Tamar. In other words, that at the end that was Russia. So Amrav Yehuda Amrav Yesh Chacham L'Russia. He was wise in how to perform acts of witness. So the Amalai. So Yendav told old Amnon, and Madu ata a kachad a dalva and a melech. Why are you so sad? The Amalai Yendav shav amitascha v'haschel v'gamer. Yendav advised him and lay on your bed and start being sick, mischal, and be sick. But pretend to be sick, have her or make food for you, and then he took her and did his thing and raped her. So she poured before him. So what does it mean that if she poured before him? I'm gonna get Amarav Shrasfali made a tikkun. She made fried food for him. I'm in specifically requested fried food because unlike cooked food is made in a closed pot. So if requesting her to come here to cook for him, Tamar, David or Tamar or someone could say, why should he come here? She could just cook in her house, send the warm pot covered, and send it over. Versus fried food, anyone who's experienced ordering fast food from a restaurant will know that if it's like a half hour delivery, then it's going to be cold by the time it gets there. They're not really a good way to insulate it properly. Especially back then, where they didn't have stuff like aluminum foil or other insulators. So, the only way to get fried food warm was to cook it right there. So, Potomer had to come to Amnon's chambers to cook right there and feed him right there. And that's why he was able to. That was part of the wisdom advised. That requests specifically fried food, so that way no one suspects. That's why you want her to come specifically to your room until it's too late. So now after Amnon raped her, he started hating her. My time, why did he all of a sudden hate her? So Amar Rav Yitzchak, Nima Nikshra Alai Vasas Krush Shrifcha. She tied one of her pubic hairs around his member and castrated him, made he's unable to have children. Meneh explains that back then, and virgins would have a special kind of ointments that they'd put on their pubic area, on their hairs, to make them hard and make them more similar to quills of a porcupine. So that demonstrates that this woman is a psula that seems to actively even protecting herself. So Amnon knew about this ointment, but nevertheless, he knew that it would hurt, but it would be pleasurable, so he still wanted it. However, what Tamar did was he took used it to slice into him and make him unable to have children. She did this consciously. She did this deliberately. Well, first, it just says, and it made him one. It's not like my ass. In Israel, I my other. Oh, in a kashra in Nima. If it just happened, then why would he hate her? So, read it that, rather say that she did it to him. As Ben Yehuda explains it, that, she, yeah. So, the Perkei Avos gives this as a classic example of Kaldavar, Kalava Shaitlu Bidavar, or any love that's dependent on a certain thing, lose the effect. So the cause here was lost. Is Avos Shaitlu Bidavar Anem Summer? And the love for her was built, was founded in lust. Lose lust, because now he can't have relations with her, or any other woman for that matter. Lose love. So now he hates her with a passionate hate. He lusted for her so strongly that it's not for the fact that he literally was unable to act on lust anymore, then, yeah, he still lusted for her extremely strongly. He was active, he knew that her hairs would hurt him. He didn't care. He was willing to go through pain. We'll discuss that more after. The fact that it says that he hated her a tremendous hatred. Yes, he might be disgusted by her now that the lust is no longer there, but what's this tremendous hatred? This tremendous hatred is that she actively did it. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is it really true that if she had pubic hair that was able to do this? V'hadarash Rava, might achziv v'yotzalach shem emigayim v'yafyech? What does it mean in the Pasuk that a name for you will go out in Goyim? In the nations, Shein Lahem Beit Erva. One of the signs of beauty is that it didn't have pubic hair. So my answer, Shani Tamar Vasa Pastayar Havai. This is another example of how Tamar was different. If she was a daughter of Pastayar, therefore she was able to have pubic hair. So it's another example of how she's a bas pastayar. And so it was further answer to your question in how do we know that was Tamar, not Amnon, that was a child that is bas tayar. This that she had pubic hair is a sign that she's a daughter of bas tayar, because as regular Jewish girls do not have pubic hair. Matikas Tamar Eifel Shal Sengus Pas Mashallah Karda. Tamar put ash on her head and tore her clothes. Tanam Shmeid Rabbi Shreb Ben Karcha, Yodag Dela Gadra Tamar Beis Hashah. Tamar established a tremendous halacha at that time. Nu they said, Im Levnet Melachim Kach, Levnet Yedis Lachas Kamim Mechama. If this happens to even the daughters of kings, to such important people, and how much more so it can happen with regular girls. And if someone's so modest as Tamar was a modest woman, and similar to her namesake, then how much more so it would be it's to someone who's not as careful with Sneas. So, Amarav Yehuda Amarav, Ba'is Hashar Gadru Al Yechad at that time, they made a decree against Yichud and on Yichud in general and on Yichud with unmarried women. Or as more established as beforehand, there was a gzera against yichud against married yichud with a married woman. That's min haTorah, but min rabbanan over here they made a gzera against even in having yichud with an unmarried woman. So now after the story of Tamar, Adenyo comes to power, so it now discusses him. But Adenyo min chagis misnasim lemar ani emleich. Adenyo was right, making himself rise up to and saying, I will be king. Amarav Yehuda Amarav Malamet Shabikish Holmai V'Lei Holmai. He tried to get the throne, and it didn't fit him. Particularly, the Gemara says elsewhere that David HaMelech had a special crown that had an indentation in it that only fit kings. That anyone who's supposed to be king, it was a perfect fit on him. Adenyo tried it, and it didn't fit him. He, in his mind, he translated it to mean that this is a sign that this crown is anyone who is enthroned. It's called it. This crown makes one suitable for the throne. Versus he doesn't need the crown. He's suitable for the throne even by his own merit, even without the crown. The first one has to explain that Adonijahu, his problem was that he was making himself rise up. If he would have risen up on his own, then he would have fit that crown. But the fact that he tried to rise himself into the crown, it didn't fit. He made himself a chariot and runners, 50 men running for him. Maribasa, so what's the special thing about this? Most wealthy people had this kind of thing. So these men were specially genetically modified to be runners. Their spleen was removed. The spleen causes some degree of a shortness of breath. And the flesh of their feet was removed, so that way they wouldn't stop if they're pierced by a thorn. This way they're especially modified to run an extra fast and extra long. That kind of modification was only done for a king. So that's what was unusual about this. Now, in between this Gemara and the next, the Mishnah discussing the limits of a king's horses, namely only what he needs for himself and his armies. So Rabbi Yehuda notes a contradiction. One pasuk says Shlema had 40,000 in it stalls all the horses, what's called the horses, stables of horses. The other pasuk says they had 400,000. So which one is it, 40 or 400,000? How can you say in an elephant's device? Are you? If he had 40,000, then call al echad ve'echad hayibar arba'a salafim arba'a is. So if he had, yeah. If he had 40,000, then each one had 4,000 in it. If he had 40,000 in stables, then each of them had 4,000 stalls in them for horses. Point being that Shlomo HaMelech had a total of 160 million horses, significantly more than he could ever have use for. Rabbi Yitzchak Rami, Rabbi Yitzchak, in turn, notes a contradiction in regards to Shlomo. Said, "In case of Nechshem Shlomo LeMoma." On one hand, and the pasuk said that silver was worth nothing in Shlomo HaMelech's times. But later it says, Ve'yitin in Hamelach is Kesef Yerushalayim Ka'avon. That Shlomo had silver in the streets of Yerushalayim like stones. It was so common. So, like Hasha, it's not a contradiction. Kedem Shnasa Shlomo Basparei Kam La'ach Shnasa Shlomo Basparei. It was worth nothing before, and was worth it had a worth after. Beforehand, Shlomo had so much that it was worth earth nothing, but afterwards, it's worth something. It's still worth it's very little. It's worth like stones, but it's still worth something. And Arsha also explains that before he married the daughter of Parai, he didn't care about silver. So therefore, in his kingdom, silver was worthless. Silver was so common that it's worthless. Versus after he married Bath Parai, he started paying attention to matters of this world, to pleasures of this world. He brought him into that stuff, and so it reflected in his kingdom that now silver had a value. Silver became less common and had a value. Amar Bischof Bischof comments in regards to this: B'shar Shnasa Shlomo Bath Parai. When Shlomo married Parai's daughter, Yar Gavriel Vinaras Kanam Bayam Vahalasir Tain Vahalavnivna Kafka Gadar Shabarevi. When Shlomo married Parai's daughter, Gavriel Ele, or the Medrash Ish and the Yerushalmi both have, it's that Michal is the one who did it. That he grabbed a stick and dropped it into the sea, and sediment gathered around it, and eventually it grew into a whole attached from the mainland and grew into a whole land, and that's where Rome was founded on. Yeah, the peninsula. So, the Ben Yehuda goes into a whole Kabbalistic explanation in about this, that this Gemara shows up in two places, one in Shabbos and one over here. Over there, he discusses the negative aspect of this, how Bas Parai, Egypt is compared to Reed, and so because Shlomo introduced this concept of the Reed into his kingdom, the Reed went into becoming the source of the Kama against the Jews. Vinaz Kana, Kana Bayam, is the letter of Nikima, or Hanikima. Sorry, Nikima. No, it's Nikima. The letter of Nikima. So it, of revenge, of vengeance. Became a source of vengeance against the Jews. So over here, he discusses it from the other side, that Hashem Hikdim and Rifula Maka, Hashem brings the, healing before the punishment, and he refers to the Zohar, or the also tells this, but clarifies that kana is a spiritual concept. It's a horn earned from the Sitra Achra, they called it. It grabs into Kedusha. So and that horn, the Zohar says, is what's going to be used to strike. Like Esav from Mashiach comes, so that's what's going on over here. This kana is the nekima that the Jews will have against the Romans when Mashiach comes. And that's also reflected by the a difference of the whether it's Michal or Gabriel. Gabriel represents the din and the misadin, the misagvura, and Michal represents mis chesed. On one hand, and the kana represents the and how because of Mitzrayim, because of Mitzrayim coming into Jews, it caused the churban, ultimately caused the churban by Sheni and the gods that we're in now. But on the other hand, it's a chesed and misrachmim. That's when Mashiach comes, that kana is going to be used to strike Esav down. So now on this note, Vamar Rav Yitzchak, Mitnei Man Skalotai Me'atayra, Why are the reasons of the mitzvahs not revealed? Most mitzvahs are chukim, and even the atheists, the reasons are revealed to be these stuff like Shabbos or Gittin Nasha are past events. Mitzvahs don't give the reason why now you should do it. Right now you should do them. The reason is, Sharei Shtei Mekrayos Nisgal HaTayim, Anvin Echshal Behen En God El Ha'ilam. Two Pesukim gave the reason for why not to do them, and a great greatest person in the world, the smartest person in the world, got stuck because of that. Ksiv La'ir B'Lei Nashim, and it says, don't have too many wives, I'm a Shema, Ani Arba V'Lei Yasser. I'll have more wives, and I won't let astray. Ksiv La'ir Zvigna, that's it. When Hashem was old, his wives did in fact turn his heart astray. And it says, as on the add horses, Shema said, and I'll have more, and I won't bring you back to Egypt. Later on, it says that Shema's own horses for his own chariots came from Mitzrayim. So it's explained that a mitzvah there's two ill ways to approach how mitzvahs work. One is that Hashem gives us the mitzvahs to cure a spiritual aspect of us and to increase the spiritual aspect of us, like a doctor giving a medicine, and then the punishments are not actual punishments, but they're like if you don't take the medicine, then and bad stuff happen. Versus the other explanation, and the other way you can look at it is they're gzeiros. It's milfnei Hashem. They're gzeiros, like decrees from a king. The fact is that both of them are the right approach. That Hashem decrees, and we follow whether or not we understand. But on the other hand, Hashem gives them to us because they have this ritual. So Shlomo Melech thought that because as he understands and how the medicine works, and he felt he doesn't need a specific medicine, he felt, okay, I can break this mitzvah without having the adverse effects. So Hashem showed him that's not how it works. It's still a matter of himlafana. The mitzvahs are decrees no matter what. Because the reason for the mitzvahs is don't do this because X will happen. Don't do X because Y will happen. And it's two mitzvahs that do that. Don't have too many wives and don't have too many horses. And both of them made a mistake because of. Therefore, the Torah, Hashem, and knew that that's what was going to happen. So Hashem didn't put any other reasons for the mitzvahs over there. I'm going to have to end here. Best friend, tomorrow we'll discuss Eisen Tif Torah. So, in Yenigo Mashiach, where is it? Sirus is the Dikim Mas Lavai. The Gemara and Bava Basra said that Hashem is going to make a Soda of his Dikim from the skin of the Leviosa. This Soda, besides for the spiritual stuff that are hinted into it, as explains in the Siddhas, and the deeper meanings of the Leviosa and Sharabar and the Yain and Shamar are also going to be a physical, spiritual, a physical, actual soda. As known, the reward of Mashiach isn't going to be in Gan Eden, and in Gan Eden there's no eating or drinking. It's going to be in this world, in the world of living. The world of living. The Neshamas in bodies, As Ramban holds, which is what Chassidus holds. So there's going to be a physical, although there's going to be spiritual in the animal about it, it's also going to be a physical soda. Was that from Persepolo, Kachin Nalish? And Allah from the Altar of Shachnarach. When someone borrows a talis with tzitzis from a friend, he's obligated to make a bracha over it immediately. Or is it maybe a thing that the person who lent it to him did so with the intent that he makes a bracha over it? And since the required bracha may not be made over a borrowed garment, because the Vasil Lohem tzitzis, as we said previously, that's on your own garments, the, we can assume that the owner lent it to him in a manner that will enable him to make the bracha. Since it's impossible for him to make a bracha over a garment unless it's his own, it's considered his, or we assume the owner gave it to him as a matana al-nas l'hafsu, as a present with the intent that it be returned.